This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Richard Fordyce, USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Programs. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with USDA's Richard Fordyce next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 560 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Staff at the USDA is working to implement the farm program updates under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, as well as administer Farm Bridge Assistance Funds and Disaster Assistance. USDA FPAC Undersecretary Richard Fordyce says farmers will have a better safety net for the crops they're planting this year.
From the Farm Service Agency's perspective, the ARC County and PLC programs are our foundational safety net programs. And with the One Big Beautiful Bill and the increase in reference prices, related to the crops that are eligible for those programs, I think that certainly we'll see, I think, more consistent payments given where we are, with prices and things today. And those payments will be larger. There's been some estimates that ARC County and PLC, payments overall across the country are going to go up significantly. It's hard, you can't really predict because we don't know where we'll be with the 26 crop, and that's the crop we're talking about, from the new base acres and reference prices, et cetera. So I believe that they are now significantly more important as a safety net program. And I think probably more to the intent of Congress when they first came about. The original ARC and PLC program started in the 2014 Farm Bill and then had improvements in the 2018 Farm Bill and then additional improvements certainly in the One Big Beautiful Bill.
It had been forever since farmers had been able to make adjustments in their base acres. This was a welcome sign for them, but also a challenge for you and your staff.
Yeah, it is. 30 million additional base acres is critically important. And, I think almost every farm, will see some change, to their base acre number. And then we'll see some locales, some geographies, probably where there's significant improvement in that base acres on a farm. But you're right. It requires us to do a history dig. So, eligible crops planted in 2019 through 2023, Farm Service Agency staff are going back and looking and seeing what crops were planted in those years. Those are the eligible years for the history dig. And then they're compiling that information. And then there's a calculation that it's literally a national calculation that's going to distribute those additional 30 million acres. If we find that the universe is larger than 30 million acres, then we will simply prorate those equally across the country. So when folks are hearing about, hey, we've got an opportunity to add base acres to our farm, it's not a first come, first served. It's going to be an orderly distribution. So folks aren't needing to camp out in the parking lot at FSA to make sure they get their additional base acres. It will be done in an orderly fashion. Landowners will be notified of the change in base acres. They'll have an opportunity to opt out if they so choose, or agree to the additional base acres that are related to their farm and their farming history from 2019 to 2023.
I want to transition to the one farmer, one fowl, but before that, let's talk about technology. I remember talking to your predecessors who at one time suggested that the USDA's database system was older than Barney the Dinosaur and was still running on tape. So how far have you come with technology, and how much technology is there left to go to ease the strain on staff and also cut through hoops and red tape for producers who are participating in programs?
When I was nominated back in January of 2025, and we started to put the team together at FPAC, you know, we talked about what's the number one priority of FPAC, and what would you like to do in your 4 years as undersecretary? And certainly the very first thing that came to mind, something that, you know, we spent a good bit of time in the first Trump administration, made some improvements. We didn't get to where we wanted to get to, was a technology modernization, a wholesale modernization across all systems, and how we interact with farmers, how those systems support farmers, how those newer systems will create an entirely different work environment for our staff, and really went to work right away on, number one, assessing kind of, you talked about Barney the Dinosaur, and I'm not sure, there may be some of them not older than that, that what are we relying on? How do we build new systems while keeping the old systems alive long enough to pull the data out of there? And then how do we transition from the new systems and then retire the old systems? And there's a bunch of things that are really positive about that. All of those old systems that you refer to, we're paying to keep those systems alive. And just over the years, I mean, it was just probably born out of necessity more than anything. When there was a new program or there was a new farm bill or there was something that came along, really the only way to address it was to create a new software platform, a new program delivery software or whatever. And so those continued to exist, and we had to continue to fund them and continue to maintain them. And so we've done a wholesale inventory of all of that stuff and how does it all interact. And it is super connected and confusing how all of these systems literally feed into what the farmer sees when he or she goes into the office and signs an eligibility form or creates a new farm, or there's a new operator brought into the business. All of that has to feed into these historic legacy systems, and they all support all of that work.
Boy, it would be great to cut through red tape and maybe even reduce the trips to town to be able to accomplish and actually the customer service improve from your agencies.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are working on that. Probably the agency that's going to see, probably more engagement with hardware technology. So laptops and those sorts of things will be NRCS. You know, NRCS technicians, soil conservationists and others that are out on farms, you know, working with farmers to make their operation more efficient, make it more, stable and more predictive, will be using those new technologies. And so, you know, you have a conversation on the farm about addressing some resource concerns related to Natural Resources Conservation Service. And so the NRCS staffer has talked to the farmer or the landowner about what they want to do. And as they're talking, they are literally creating an agreement or a contract or a program eligibility sign up. And the farmer sitting on the tailgate of the truck is going to be able to digitally sign that application and start the process, whether that's an EQIP or a CSP contract or whatever it may be. Maybe it's a tile outlet terrace system or a grass waterway that they're getting ready to design. All of that work can be done while they're in the field having the conversation with the farmer.
So one farmer, one file. It sounds good. Not that easy.
You know, it's not that easy. And I think whether I describe it or, the secretary describes it or the deputy secretary describes it, I think we all have a little bit of a different definition, but it all ladders up to the same thing. And I've said the one farmer, one file title is kind of what I would refer to as a 10,000 foot level title. And it includes a lot of things. A lot of the things that we've already talked about, Jeff, from a from an IT modernization standpoint, but it's also work that we have to do at Farm Production and Conservation. So with the Farm Service Agency, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and the Risk Management Agency, taking a very in-depth look at what is the customer experience for people that work with our agencies. When they engage with us, what are we asking them to sign to be eligible, either from an adjusted gross income, a conservation compliance, all of the things that, you know, federal law requires to be done. And are we, if we are engaging with this producer or this landowner at all three agencies, are we asking that individual to sign documents that are very similar? It's just that, you know, NRCS is using this one and FSA is using this one. And so we're taking a deep look into what are the forms and how are we interacting with farmers related to all of the, I'm just going to say the paperwork, the red tape. And what can we eliminate? And is there a common form? We firmly believe there will be. Are there common eligibility forms that once you sign that, you're done? You've done it for FSA, RMA, and NRCS. And so that's going to require a look at probably some internal policies, but also a look at those forms. And are there forms, which I'm confident there are, that are very similar, but can we incorporate the needs of FSA and NRCS and RMA in a common form that requires one signature? It follows you from agency to agency. All agencies have access to it. And, you know, this could be one form this could be one entry point, and it could be more than one entry point that we're going to be able to streamline. And again, with the IT modernization, those forms will follow you from agency to agency. And with one click, you know, an employee at NRCS can view what you've signed at FSA, and that suffices for NRCS or RMA. And it's really exciting. You know, we've been so busy, and it's not an excuse. It's just kind of the way things are, but we've been so busy implementing the One Big Beautiful Bill and the Farmer Bridge Assistance and now the Assistance for Specialty Crop Farmers, that we haven't been able to really, spend the time needed to assess what that's going to look like. But that's next on the docket. To be able to find out what we can consolidate and make that customer experience something that is not cumbersome, that is not riddled with red tape, but is a straightforward, streamlined way to participate with our agencies.
Okay, so Richard, the Farmer Bridge Assistance approved and sign up has been underway. How long is the window open for Farmer Bridge Assistance and the journey of start to finish, how far along are you?
It seems like we've been talking about Farmer Bridge Assistance for quite a while. Sign up started on February 23rd. Certainly, overwhelming response, kind of that first week, 2 weeks. It's slowed down a little bit, probably because, you know, we've got a big chunk of them done. But the sign up ends April 17th. And that's something that folks need to be aware of because we still have applications that we know we haven't got a signature on yet. And the reason we know that is we're comparing it to ECAP, the program that was ran last spring in the spring of 2025. And we know that the eligible participants in ECAP are going to be a very similar group that will be eligible for Farmer Bridge Assistance. So as of April 7th, we've approved more than 453,000 applications. We've paid out $9.17 billion, and the total dollars available in FBA is $11 billion, and we know we're going to spend those dollars. So we still have a little ways to go, and we're just encouraging folks, if you haven't looked at an application, if you have not gone to the FSA office, if you've not inquired about a Farmer Bridge Assistance and your eligibility, to participate, then you have until April 17th. We've talked quite a bit about the ease of this program. The applications are pre-filled. It's data that we had either through an acreage report for the 2025 crop. The payment rate per crop per acre was pre-established, and so that's already pre-filled in the application. But it does require the farmer to access either through the county office or through login.gov to access that application and sign it before we can initiate payment. So, I guess we're really focusing on getting those last few folks into the door, as it were, to get those applications signed and to get those payments to those producers.
Other side of the coin is the specialty crop grower, the other $1 billion that is available for them. How close is the USDA to providing those funds?
We're close. The specialty crop farmer, they're probably not as conditioned to go to the FSA office and timely file an acreage report, which is true in some cases and not true in others. There's parts of the country. I was in Yuma, Arizona, a month ago, and I went to the Yuma County FSA office. All of their specialty crop growers, they annually will do acreage reports, or even more than one time a year do acreage reports. And so we've got counties, where the specialty crop growers are doing that and have done that for a long time. And then we've got places in the country where specialty crop growers maybe haven't historically filed an acreage report. So the number one thing we have to do to initiate the payment under the specialty crop piece of it is have an acreage report. And so we opened up acreage reporting across the country for specialty crop growers, farmers, and when we closed that, we heard from congressional members, we heard from industry, we heard from farmers that they weren't able to get it all completed. And so we opened acreage reporting back up, and it's open for 4 weeks. It closes April 24th, I believe, to get that acreage report in. And once the acreage report's in, it's just like the Farmer Bridge Assistance. We'll know then the universe of acres that will be eligible for the payments. And at that point, then we can start to calculate, similarly to the way we did with Farmer Bridge Assistance, we can calculate those acreage payments by crop and calculate a payment for that producer. We have to finalize the acreage reporting before we can do that, Jeff.
So disaster assistance is available. The question, for who and for how long?
FSA and NRCS both have a number of standing disaster programs. These are programs that came to us through various farm bill legislation. The One Big Beautiful Bill actually kind of strengthened a lot of the disaster programs, whether that was payment rates or the elimination of payment limitations, maybe the way that a payment was calculated. So there were changes in the One Big Beautiful Bill, and we are in the process of implementing those. But disaster happens, unfortunately, Jeff. Disaster happens in a lot of different ways in a lot of different parts of the country, literally probably around the year. A disaster is anything that is a qualified weather event, and use your imagination. It can be super cold, too much snow, a flood, a drought, a wildfire, a tornado, actually. Anything that's a defined weather event that created a loss on the farm landscape. And so a number of programs related to disaster response that are administered both by FSA and NRCS. A lot of them, most recently, I was in Nebraska 3 weeks ago and toured with the secretary, the Nebraska wildfires, and looked at that landscape after the fires had gone through. And we heard stories of fences that had been burned, livestock handling facilities, some livestock, were killed or damaged in the wildfires. There's a livestock indemnity program that actually pays producers for livestock that were either killed or damaged in a natural disaster. you know, those, in those instances, the producer needs to go to the FSA office, and report, you know, what the loss was. At the time, you know, we were encouraging folks to take photos. You know, everybody's got a phone, or almost everybody has a phone with a camera on it. Take photos of the livestock or the damaged livestock. And there is, I mean, we've got a mechanism to pay producers for that lost livestock. ELAP is another program, in within FSA that pays for either the transporting of livestock to an area that has available forage, or it also pays for transportation of feed. If the livestock are going to stay there and you need to haul feed into them, you know, it pays for the transportation of that. ECP is another program within FSA. This is the one that helps rebuild infrastructure. So fences and livestock handling facilities, you know, other types of infrastructure that were damaged, you know, either by a wildfire or flood or whatnot. And we've got, you know, pretty attractive cost shares to be able to help producers respond and rebuild, rebuild that infrastructure. Again, a picture's worth a thousand words. You know, if you have these instances, if you have these cases, take photos, use that as documentation. And I'm sure, you know, folks would have other ways to document those losses. But lots of things related to disaster, Jeff.
Richard, one of the discussions in 2026 is the effort toward reorganization. And that leads us to thoughts about staffing. So from the federal level down to the county level, how does USDA reorganization affect the workforce of your agencies, and are you hiring?
I think the mission areas, you know, view that as an opportunity to get folks, you know, out into the country where they're actually delivering services. And I think it makes a lot of sense for, you know, and, you know, whatever the agency is within USDA, to have the people that are serving that constituency be closer to that constituency. And having said that, that doesn't mean that every person is leaving Washington, that the folks that are at headquarters. You know, we still certainly need, you know, policy folks that, you know, that are writing regulations, and they're interacting with, they're interacting with the folks that wrote the legislation, you know, to be able to understand and make sure that when we're administering these programs, that we are hitting the mark. We're doing it the way that the intent was. And so, you know, a lot of those folks will remain in the Washington Capital Region. But folks that are more, engaging at the producer level, or, you know, or providing services that support these agencies, having them out, out in the country. And we have a lot of folks that are already out there, right? I mean, within FPAC, we've got folks scattered already across the country, and, you know, and that works fine. As we think about the reorg, how can we be better as a mission area and as our agencies if we are closer to the people that we serve? And I think that makes a lot of sense. From a county office perspective, obviously the reorg will have really no effect on them, nor will it have any effect in the state offices. So we have state offices for NRCS and FSA, and then we have regional offices for RMA, and they will be very, very much unchanged through the reorg. But the county office piece is kind of where our farmers and others, you know, have that direct contact with the agencies. And, you know, through the deferred retirement program and other things, you know, we did have some folks that left federal service, and we are right now looking at ways, opportunities to hire, and to hire in the right places. I've used the example a lot of times during DRP, or the deferred retirement program. We had a situation of a county where no one took DRP, and so that county looks very much like it did before that. We had a county very close to them that about half the folks took DRP, and I use the term they're managing. And then we had a county not far from these other two that most everyone in the county took DRP, and they're having to really adjust to be able to provide service. And you know, the state executive directors and FSA and others, district directors, you know, they're stepping in and they're making it work. It's probably, I wouldn't say it's ideal, but we're delivering on the mission. But in those cases, Jeff, we're going to be looking at hiring folks, filling those critical positions where we do have gaps, and we admit that there are places in the country where we do have gaps, and we're looking right now at ways to be able to hire those folks.
Well, Richard Fordyce, we want to thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. You have no shortage of things to do and of staff to oversee in the outreach and the implementation of programs to farmers and ranchers across the country. Thanks for being here. And you know that when you're here, the guest gets the last word.
Well, Jeff, thanks for the opportunity to be on Open Mic. It's always a pleasure to visit with you. I would just leave folks with this, and you mentioned it, you touched on it. You know, we do have a lot of folks within the three agencies that are they're the front line. They're the ones that are, you know, they're the ones that are doing these programs. They're helping assist in disaster. They're offering financing and credit. They're doing conservation programs across the landscape. They're the real heroes when it comes to this mission area. They're the ones that are on the ground. They're the ones that have the relationships with the local community and the local farmers. And I would say that you could not get a better or finer accumulation of human beings than the folks that work on behalf of agriculture and USDA in the county offices. And certainly my appreciation goes to them. And I would end it with saying a huge thank you to those folks. What they do is critically important, and know that everyone appreciates their effort.
Our thanks to Richard Fordyce, USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Programs. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nelling.